full sense of accomplishment, a real sense of it's time. I have not felt permission inside myself to do spiritual direction formally with people. And I almost felt like I'd done the hard work to come to this place. And what's interesting is I last week in my, as I was going through the program, I had a kind of 2 days on my own to do some preparation for my final week. And the Holy Spirit whispered in my heart, John, spiritual direction is not a profession, nor does it require certification. It is a disposition with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I entered into the week realizing it doesn't matter what they give me at the end. The work inside has been done. And whilst I'm better equipped, there has been a significant internal change in me that has brought me to a different place where I can be more available to people because of who I am and the disposition I'm in versus that I've got a certificate on my wall.
Right.
Yeah, right. So very personal, very, very wonderful place. And, of course, it's no accident that the Spirit has brought me to this place at the end of a 6-year journey.
Yeah. Yep. Huh. Well, that's quite an accomplishment. That's 6 years is no small amount of time to stay in there,
And you know, Gary, it was going to be my DMIN project, right? So, and I felt, you know, that the kind of work I was going to do with people, the DMIN would be too restrictive for me in terms of me having to jump through hoops instead of getting at the heart of where I needed to be equipped. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
So.
Great.
Anyway.
Good. Hey, by the way, do you have your picture exercise up in front of you, your PowerPoint or keynote?
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
All right. So you ready to go to keep going on this?
Sure. Yep.
Okay. Well, last place we were was picture number 19. Well, we ended with picture 18, Collingwood. And then, so now we're on 19, which you named Unique.
Yeah.
So tell me about that picture, what you saw, why it hits you, this word unique, and so on.
So the shepherd's leading the sheep, I'm going to surmise. But I'm really intrigued by the little black sheep at the front. And I think what's come clear since we last met, it's not that I'm just shepherding. It's not that I'm just doing mentor coaching, spiritual direction. It is who will I uniquely do it with? And so I'm interested in the little black sheep there.
Hmm. And that's where your eyes are drawn, your heart's drawn as the black sheep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now 20, repair.
Yeah, I mean, I'm you know, I spent a lot of my time professionally working in the ocean around boats, and you know, I am big on what lies beneath, and you know, the old Gordon MacDonald book that he wrote, you know, The Life That God Blesses, about the weight under the water, but particularly, mm-hmm. you know, boats traveling backwards and forwards gather a lot of junk and stuff underneath it, and most people ignore it. So eventually, the boat has to be brought in. And the underside has to be, you know, looked after. And, you know, I was a search and rescue diver. And, you know, we were trained to go along the bottom of boats. And, you know, you were looking for people or things that have happened there. And so I just kind of realized that there's a vulnerability underneath there the Titanic, as we've talked about, is a great example. But a boat that's lying dormant for too long gathers a lot of barnacles and crap that eventually slow it down. So.
So, in your training with rescue, deep water rescue or whatever, what did you end up having to do? What was your experience like in that?
It was a twofold function. It was search, meaning looking for people that had died in the water, and rescue and intervening into rescue situations where people were in trouble. So one was being called in too late, and the other was being called in the throes of a crisis, a stressful situation.
Okay. So did you enjoy that part of your life then?
Well, remember, I think what we said before, nobody likes looking for a child that's drowned, but I did enjoy the idea of being part of an elite unit.
Yep.
I definitely, that played with my, I think we said that before, 12 or 13,000 police officers, there were only 12 search and rescue divers.
Yeah. Okay.
I kind of like that mystique and belonging to a fairly unique team that, and I think we talked about that last time. That was an aha for me last time. I've always drifted towards the unique, the different. Even now, as I say that, Gary, Muskoka Woods in the Christian camping world is very unique, and one of the cultural critiquer said to me one day, Muskoka Woods is the Christian camping industry what the special forces are to the army. And I said, oh, you're talking my language, what do you mean? He goes, well, you guys go after people that no one else has the courage to go after, completely unchurched kids. And he said, you look like the enemy, the rest of the camps think you're pagan liberals, but he goes, actually one day we're going to realize you were doing a lot of necessary work. And I go, ooh, I said, you're just talking my language. I said, that is so lovely and helpful. So.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. He read your mail. He knew you. Okay, so 21, leader in that picture.
I mean, this goes back to my current active mission statement. I'm never fully alive till my wings are fully stretched and utter dependency on God for his glory alone. So. The eagle is, as we know, especially in the American narrative, a very overused symbol of leadership. But at the same time, I mean, they are the king of the birds for a reason. And I'm just drawn to that idea of, I'm drawn to people that are very, they're unique. They're out there. I'm not drawn to narcissists. I'm not drawn to big ego type leaders, but I'm drawn to people that have really become a leader uniquely in their own right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
So you could not get me in the room with a Donald Trump, but you could get me in the room. You could get me in the room probably with, a Dennis. What's his name? Kent Kucinich?
I'm not sure who you're talking about right now. I'm just, yeah.
The other guy that's running, there was Ted Cruz and
oh. Kucinich. Oh, no, there's Kasich and there's Cruz. Right, and they both dropped out now.
Yeah, I could be with a Kasich, but I couldn't be with a Cruz, and I definitely couldn't be with a Trump.
Yep. Yeah. Well, hey, pray for our country now that Cruz is the man. Anyway.
Our Trump is the man.
Well,
we're opening our gates for immigration. Come aboard.
You know what? Lee and I were talking about this last night, actually. We were going to talk about Canada and Australia. So anyway, okay. 22, the word glory.
I've listened to your talks. I've read the book. I mean, this is about people uniquely expressing their gifts and together creating an incredible work of art. So I just finished this morning working with a very senior executive pastor of a church, and he was trying to wrestle down what is his next growth edge. And he said to me, I've realized that I only come alive when there's a crisis and the adrenaline's flowing. And he goes, I'm at a stage in life where there is no crisis and no adrenaline, and I'm kind of like, well, how do I show up in the room? And so part of what I was doing this morning was working with him to say, what might God be inviting you to learn in this place? And he's learning how to express himself without the crisis, without that. And so this picture just says, how do I, and I shared with him, Gary, your piece on the effect you have on people. And I thought that picture, I thought, you know what? That is the glory of God. All the colors are expressed. And together, when you look at the piece at the bottom, they're starting to merge together in the water. And, yeah, I just felt that picture said to me, fully expressing who you are and being vibrant, that must be the glory of God.
Hmm.
If I said that to the wrong crowd, Gary, I could be talking about a whole different thing, but
yes, you're right. You're right. But hey, you'd have the courage to do that.
Well, yeah. Nobody wants to go into that world.
You're
likely to end up in the news or end up in some court.
That's true. Okay, 23, unshakable.
Yeah, this goes back to a psalm that when I'm put in front of people and I start to, the little boy starts to show up in me, and the worry about, will this bomb, how might this go? I find great ability to meet God by looking at the mountains and realizing from the Psalms, God is unshakable. As these mountains will not fall, neither will God fail you. And that kind of thing. So mountains have a great sense of, what do you say, though the mountains fall into the sea, I just find great peace about realizing God is like that mountain, and what would it take for that to fail, and even if it did, God will not fail me. So there's an unshakableness to that.
Yeah. Good. So it's a mountain. Is there anything about the water in front of the mountain, or not just what?
Yeah, I mean, I love. I mean, if I had a deck chair, I could sit there for the whole day. I love the reflection. I love the peace, the quiet. The sense of security, the sense of that. That would be the place where I would open my Bible and my journal, and it would be like God would be screaming at me, and I mean that in a, I couldn't miss him if I tried kind of way.
Yeah. I was wondering, as you were describing this whole thing a second ago, is there something significant that the water is very still before the mountain? The stillness, kind of going back to the guy's comment, there doesn't have to be a crisis. Things can be still and at peace.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay.
No, there's no, but that, you know, I would be parked in my car there for a long, long time. That just resonates with restoration and confidence building, that kind of scene there to me.
Yeah. Great. Okay. 24, life to the full.
I mean, how can you not love this little lady? You want to hug her. I mean,
So, yeah, what do you see in her?
I would hope it's true, but she just looks like the happiest little lady in the entire world with a towel wrapped around her head. And she's like just so enjoying that moment, that life, or the attention, or whatever needs being met. She's a lady with so much vibrancy and color, but her face is one that she could tell you and me stories that would probably buckle our knees. And yet her eyes are alive. Her she's got no teeth, I imagine. Like, what has this lady lived through? And yet, look, she's like, and you almost wonder, you know, is the towel wrapped in her head? And it's a fun way of just being her. And where's she going to go with that towel? And she's going to go, yeah, she's just full of life and mischief and stories and wisdom. And you'd kill to spend a couple hours with her and say, Nana, tell me your story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Yeah. 25, launch.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I love people, you know, who master their own trade and master their own, become masterful. And I've never understood surfing, why you spend thousands of hours to ride a wave for 10 seconds seems to me the stupidest, silliest sport, but I could watch them all day. But there, you know, but the precision of this, you know, it's either a young teenage guy or it's a girl, but there's just this, they're out there. And also in this picture, they're breaking free from the wave. I thought surfers stayed on the wave. They're like jumping beyond, going, doing the extraordinary, the not normal, the unconventional. And I'm drawn to that kind of a person and place.
Okay. By the way, have you ever seen the movie, speaking of this, the movie called Riding Giants, the surfing movie?
No, I haven't.
And yeah, it's really a documentary is what it is, that kind of a movie. But I show a clip. In fact, I was just doing it this weekend. I was doing down in Texas last weekend, and I always show a clip at the end, a seven-minute clip. But I think you would love this movie called Riding Giants. Well, Laird Hamilton is a surfer, and it has so much in it. It is a transcendent film, and you know, someone gave this to me.
Is that in one of your workshops you've recorded? Because you know where you break from movies.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if it's in the Glory of Your Life.
Yeah.
Okay. Series. Yeah, I'm sure I was using
it
back then. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Half the talks I probably still have, you know, wherever I'm driving, I put it on. So I might have jumped ahead or missed it, but I don't remember that coming up. But I will, in fact, I know it's on my – Riding Giants is on my documentary list in Netflix, I think. So I'll go back to there.
Yeah, you'll love it. And there are so many very transcendent scenes and conversations and – anyway, you'll love it. I'm sure you'll be using it. It's really good. So, okay, 26, powerful.
Well, I mean, I love when I'm flying in planes, as you're literally flying, you know, 50 feet above the clouds, and you look out and you go, this is like unbelievable. And the plane, you know, this just happened to me. The plane sits, you know, 40, 50 feet above the clouds, and you look across and you go, wow. And I just had that imagery of, this is a powerful image, the dead tree, the clouds that, I don't know whether it's smoke or whether it's clouds, but I feel like it's clouds. And there was just something powerful about the picture, not even what's in the picture. It was just, it grabbed me.
Mm-hmm. Anything in particular about the tree, either the dead tree or it's a tree in winter, has set it in the forefront of this massive cloud?
I feel compassion for the tree. Like, what happened? Was it hit by lightning? Was it starved? Was it, you know, it's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, now that you say that, the cloud has in it the potential to bring water and rain and life to that tree, but that tree's just got the life sucked right out of it. And yet, look how close life and opportunity is to the tree. But for some reason, it couldn't absorb. It was starved to death. And yet, look what was just literally within a hair's breadth away from it.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. 27, vision.
So our vision at Muskoka Woods, our summer camp, is to be a living exhibition of life of God. And it's rooted prophetically, small p, when I say that, in Zechariah chapter 8, which was the return of the children of Israel after the exile. And Zechariah said that you're coming to a city that will be a place of peace. And he describes what it will be like. And at the end of it, it says, and 10 men from all nations will take you by the hem of your garment and say, let us go with you, because we hear God is with you. And so Zechariah describes what life looks like when God is with you. And part of it is said, and in that day, old people will each sit with cane in their hand, and children will play in the streets again. And so one of the things that I talk about is that a summer camp is a place where kids can play in the streets the way I used to be able to play in the streets, that you no longer can play in the streets in this world. And so there was a day where I could go out and I would say to my mom, I'm gone. And my mom would say, okay, be back for dinner at 6. And my mom would say, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going here. And my mom never worried. There's not a parent will allow their kid to do that, Mom. And as you and I know, that the parents that are rebelling against that world are getting put in prison because they're letting their children walk backwards and forwards to school when they're only 5 and 6 years old. And now they're calling them, you know, their neglectful parents. And you're kind of going, dear goodness. But when Christ is resident in a street, its final evidence will be that children can play in the streets again. That's evidence.
So what do you see in this picture with that? Do you see that? Or?
Well, I see the old man with his cane in his hand sitting there, and he's sitting amongst the nets. And I'm sure at one stage he was a fisherman. And I this to me just spoke to the fulfillment of a leader's vision.
So kind of sitting back and looking at the years that have gone past that he's been involved in, kind of there's – he's actually almost resting on the labor kind of thing, or reminiscing on what it used to be and it's not the same anymore today.
No, to me this was much more of the work is done and now I can enjoy the fruit of my years looking at all that we've worked hard for and all that we've done.
Okay.
And obviously the old man has done his work well because the nets are folded down, they're organized, they're washed, they're ready to go out again. And so he can rest knowing the next generation are kicking in. They're able to do what we've taught them.
Okay. Okay, so there's a sense of what, like completion in this? Fulfillment? Well done?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, next one.
Yeah, this is just about, you know, with my attention deficit disorder, I'm very scattered. This spoke to me in a way about how to focus in and laser in on what this is about. And so just the work I did this morning with this executive pastor was helping him focus in on what is this really about and zeroing in on There is a rock here that needs to be built on. Here's a rock that needs to be identified. And, you know, and I'm really big on, you know, the old Stephen Covey analogy of put the rocks in the jar first and then the pebbles, then the sand. And what is the big rock here that this is really about that we should focus on? And it's in the basement of a barn or something. And And that's where I tend to go with leaders. I go, you know, it's the old analogy that my friend used to preach and wrote about in an article, the old analogy of the cracks on the 42nd floor. But when the building inspector arrived, the guy went to go up. He said, let's start in the basement. And he went to the basement. The guy said, why are you going to the basement? He goes, if there's cracks on the 42nd floor, it's probably a problem with the foundation. And I am drawn to go deep into what cannot be seen. And then, you know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. I'm just typing notes as you're talking. Okay. Okay, then 29, fearless.
I have this desire to, I'm once in my life, sail across the Atlantic. And this boat here is designed to do a transatlantic kind of thing. I don't know if you sail, but it is clearly, it's not, this boat is not designed for comfort. This is an ocean going kind of boat. And so for me to take that risk would require a sense of fearlessness, and fear plays a very important role and a limiting role in my life and in leaders' lives. And a lot of what I do is help people identify what is the fear, what is this about, and how do you move through it? Because when you're in the senior role as a leader, you will deal with two things, fear and loneliness. And so I just love the fact that leaders have this longing to cross to the other side and go where people haven't gone. But I just love the picture. It's like, here we go. But if you notice, the one guy's lying back there and is going, well, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I'm kitted out ready for the worst. But look, I got my – he's lying on the deck. Do you see him there?
Yep. Yep.
And the other guys have their feet over the edge. And I go, you know, but you know it's coming, Gary. Those guys have their life jackets on and they're harnessed in. So they're going, I'll take it while it's good because it's about to change. You just get that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I'm just zeroing in on this picture. Okay. Okay, it takes us to 30, boot camp.
Yeah, I had to do my own time, you know, 14 weeks at boot camp and the police, and it's so formational. I it's a rite of passage for, I think, people to go through a boot camp kind of experience in life and test yourself and be prepared. But, you know, I went through my 14 weeks, and at the end of it, I had a very personal encounter with my drill sergeant, and, you know, and in the end he said, guys, I have pushed you because I want to prepare you to be ready to what you may encounter. And you go back to that training, you go back to the basics, you go back to the fundamentals, you go back to your most basic stuff. So, you know, they find police officers dead with bullets in their pocket, empty shells, because they train them to take the empty shells and put it in their pocket in training. And as they did in training, they acted on the field. Well, you and I know, why would you waste time if you're under fire putting empty shells in your pocket? Well, it's because the training guy didn't like to clean up the shells at the end of the day. And I don't remember where I came across this. I think it was my firearm instructor told me that. He said, so as you train, you will perform. And I think that is a very true kind of piece, that we need boot camp, we need basic training, and that training needs to put us into very difficult, stressful situations so that we are able and ready to perform under those same conditions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So training, preparation, those are really key words for you.
Yeah, and remember, I'm looking at this picture with the idea that this is SEAL team training selection, right? Because they wear white T-shirts and they wear those kinds of helmets. So I kind of thought to myself, you know, I'm a kind of wannabe SEAL team kind of personality, although I know I could never make it on the SEAL team. But the idea of being a part of that elite brigade and that kind of stuff. So I could never have made it onto that kind of that team, but I made it onto, you know, an anti-terrorist unit, you know,
yep.
That wasn't required to have the physical endurance of someone in a special forces situation, but I had to be a person that had extreme patience. Totally different kind of work, right? Intelligence gathering versus actual engagement. So, you know, I don't have the upper body strength back then, you know, and I press ups and pull ups were my worst. I could deadlift anything, but, you know, I was just watching the other day, you know, the qualifications for that, you know, 10 pull ups. When I was 19, 18, I could only do 2 pull ups. I would never have made it. But I could sit and watch for hours and hours and hours and be completely able to just stay in that place, which is really funny for a guy with ADD. But, you know,
true. It does seem strange, yeah.
But people with ADD can hyper-focus, right? That's one of the ironic things. So anyway, that picture just spoke to me about getting ready, being prepared, manning up, going through the mess, paying the price, qualifying, being proud of yourself at the end of it and going, I survived, I.
Yep. Yep, good. Okay, 31, Pathfinder.
What is the story behind these boots? Where have they been and what have they done? But they look well used, they look well worn, and somehow they get left to become obviously an antique thing. And so I'm always watching those shows, Antique Roadshow, the Corvette in the barn, the picker guys that go out and find stuff in old barns, and, you know, they're always after value. I'm after the story. Where has that been, and what did that do, and where did it go, and how was it found? So these boots were made for walking. These boots have walked, but something about these boots told me they've gone a long way and cut a path, and I kind of would like to hear that story.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So now that takes us to, just jumping back here. Okay, so 32, Psalm 32 is what you labeled it.
No, Psalm 23.
I'm sorry, yeah, Psalm 23, yep. I'm thinking of slide 32. Yeah. Okay, yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think Psalm 23 is the quintessential psalm for leaders. We've reduced it to a funeral psalm, but it's actually the daily life of a leader in Christian leadership, and living out of the principle of Psalm 23 is critical to survive the in the throes of leadership. And I surmise that David was reflecting on his younger years, and if I can help put into a younger leader the practices of Psalm 23, then, you know, it will take him from or her from a young age to and I shall dwell in his house forever and ever. So there's obvious that from start to finish, Psalm 23 has something to say to us. These things will sustain you in a lifelong endurance of a leader. And that's one of the key things I teach.
Okay. And anything specific about this particular sheep pasture picture?
Well, it's
or
funny
just as
when
you ran across it.
Well, it's funny, when I pulled up, I thought, you know, there's a little pile of sticks there. And obviously the farmer has, as they've been doing their business, they've been picking up twigs and collecting them. Because I'm sure sheep are so dumb, they walk into it and spike themselves or hurt their hooves. So somebody's been collecting the junk and the waste and piling it up and getting it ready. They could also be building a fire. It looks like it's in England, so it's, but you know, I'm not thinking like it's in Israel where they're lighting fires at nighttime to keep warm or protect, but somebody's gathering the twigs and sticks and pulling them out of the way to create a better, safer pasture.
Okay. Okay. Next one.
I mean, this just goes back to my whole bridge analogy. You know, this is a bridge with great expanse and it reaches. And so I've always seen myself as a bridge builder, which means that if I identify we need to bridge this, I'm willing to build a bridge and I'm willing to go to the far side to meet you, even though you may not be part of that and want that. I'm willing to go the whole way across to meet you and say to you, look, maybe there's an opportunity here. Yeah, there's depth, there's expense, there's...
Anything in particular about this bridge picture? I mean, there are so many types of bridge pictures, but anything in particular about this one?
Well, it's funny you mention that. I don't know if this is true, but it looks to me like the bridge up in the Virginia, the Gauley Bridge, the big giant bridge. And although that may not be that bridge to me personally is a real place of I'm heading down for my times of rest. And I always love when I drive over that bridge, I know I'm getting closer to, you know, my time in North Carolina or Florida. Or I know when I cross the bridge, I'm getting closer back to home. So it is for me a place of rest and place of kind of making myself ready. And I love driving down that way. And that bridge is a big marker in my life to say, you know, I'm either moving back to a place of rest and restoration, or I'm moving back across into action and stuff like that.
Okay. Okay. So the next one, which is 34, is labeled service.
I am old school. I'm big on veterans. I took our family across to Belgium to visit our Uncle Ray's grave. Wanted my kids to go and see all those white headstones. He died on his 19th birthday, September 15th, 1945. And so I wanted them to see and learn that we live because others have gone before us. And so I honor, respect, learn from, and admire, and I'm grateful for people that have, you know, laid down their life. And in fact, I got into a really immature match battle on Facebook about 2 months ago, because one of the guys had critiqued the wars that are going on right now, and it kind of, you know, put our military down, and I just, it triggered me, and I just said, hold on a minute. I go, you know, every time you post something criticizing that our soldiers are reading this, and I think it would be a time not to say stuff like that. And the guy said, well, it's just another big mistake. Well, I took a picture of Uncle Ray's headstone that I have in my hallway. And I wrote this gratitude letter to Uncle Ray, taking up, you know, he didn't know why he was going. He didn't know if he would win. He didn't fully understand. He was only 19. He was given an assignment that day, was outside of his thing, and he died. And I wrote him this letter of thank you. And all of a sudden, my friend started going, oh, my goodness, he goes. It was like, I mean, I couldn't stop myself, Gary. It was like, you know, I just it's so easy for people to critique leaders and until they're sitting in their chair, and I'm just a great defender of leaders that are in the throes of it. And because I'm in the throes of it myself, and I just find great empathy and great kind of, you know, hand-holding in that sense, because I understand the price and the demands and the pressures and the fears and the loneliness. So, you know, I just find myself naturally defending leaders and asking people to go, hey, cool your jets, you know. You know, you're not in the throes of this, so.
Mm-hmm. So just out of curiosity, how did this conversation stop? How did it come to a conclusion on Facebook?
One of my young guys that I think is one of the more indiscreet, immature guys wrote me a text and said, I think that's enough, John. You've made your point. And I wrote to him and I said, why? He said, we're not used to seeing this side of you and it's a bit jarring. And he goes, I got to give it to you. It's good. But man, you're just not stopping here. And he kind of made me stop. So I went to my wife and I said, can you read this? She goes, dear goodness, you're doing this on Facebook? And I said, yeah. And she goes, why? And I said, and I went, oh, because the guy that wrote it triggered me. And I was dealing with my triggered side rather than my passionate side. And so I removed it.
Yeah.
I forgot for a moment. I forgot for a moment my place in front of my young staff.
Right. Right.
And it's not that it was bad. Gary, I mean, I can say this to you, honestly. It was so brilliant. It was so devastating. It was so... like impassioned, but it wasn't the right venue to make a guy that probably triggers me anyway, and, you know, excuse the language, but make an ass out of him live on Facebook. Because what happened was my young people, you know, who even though they would be against the war, started joining in and going, you're right, you know, my grandfather, I've not thought about that. And suddenly it felt like I had brought, you know, all hell. I'd shown up with the special forces.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right.
When I'm
the
at
last
my best,
one.
Gary, when I'm at my best self, I think I told you that I'm like a dolphin. When I'm not at my best self, I'm like a viper. But if you take the best of the viper and the best of the dolphin, you get the sheepdog. Because vipers bite at you, but sheepdogs nip at you to move you towards the shepherd. When I'm at my best self, I can nip at you and I can kind of bark at you, but it's in service of the shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
That was in service of a guy that I just had enough of him mouthing off about everything, and I just kind of thought, I'm going to put you in your place here, and I'm going to turn, you know, 4,500 people on Facebook against you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a hard thing about something, a social media type of thing like that, that there's only so much you can convey in you know, a short amount of narrative of text kind of thing. And then, but there is something to allowing the audience to learn to counteract somebody and to counteract a point. But yeah, it's interesting that one of your staff people said you need a cease and desist right now. You've overdone it.
Well, because what happens then is I give people who are inappropriate an opportunity, you know, to say, call them names and say, you're this, you're an idiot, you're whatever. And John's right, you're nothing but a dumb ass. You know, that's what happens. All of a sudden, those comments started appearing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And then
yep.
You realize.
Oh, listen. I'm the same. I got to be really careful when I look at Facebook or other things that I want to get into it. And I think, okay, now just stop for a minute. First of all, they're not going to listen to you. Secondly, who is going to listen is everyone else partaking of this conversation. Anyway, so I know I guess why I can't do much there. I can't be there very long, you know.
Yeah, and remember, Gary, my average staff member, you know, is 19 to 20 years old, 21 years old. And, you know, there's 5,000 of them pretty much on my Facebook account. I'm the wrong guy to be modeling how to use social media to make an ass out of someone.
Yep. Okay, 35, last one, Mystic.
You know what, I am in a very healthy sense a Christian mystic. And I deeply committed the Word of God, deeply committed, but I enjoy going, we don't know what's at the end of that, but we know that Christ is with us, and he may be taking us to places we don't know. And the mystery of that, the idea that, yeah, you know what, I can explain to you how God works, but I don't really know how he works. I can give you my best version, but some days God interrupts and says, that's not the way. And some days, you know, I'm so busy telling people the way to get to know God is through scripture and preaching, and all of a sudden he meets me through a bird. And I'm going, God, I can't preach this one because I don't want people working in nature, but why was it that that little sparrow came down and sat 5 feet from me and chirped while I'm sitting quietly in the bushes, while I'm reading about a sparrow doesn't fall from the air? And a sparrow comes
right
down and I'm going, okay, God, why is it, you know, I'm... So you know what I mean? Like, there is that wonderful mystic side to me where I'm going, I can give you 3 points beginning with P on how to discern, discover the will of God. But some days there is a peace that comes over me that I cannot understand, or, you know, and so there's a true sense of knowing the unknowing, that I'm drawn to the writers, you know, John of the Cross and, you know, Henry Nouwen, and that idea of, so there is a small and mystic mystery side. You know, what you think is going to happen, you know, you only know, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 benches down. I don't know what's at the end of that tunnel, and let's not pretend we do.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so I was going to ask you a question, and you started touching on it. So this is a really unique picture with all these many benches. Of course, you can only, like you said, see 5 of them, and they disappear. If they disappear, there's no more. It's hard to even tell. And they're all empty. No one's sitting there. The lamps are on, so either it really is dawn or dusk, or it's just so foggy. I would assume the lights are on because it's actually getting dark out. But, I mean, anything else about this particular picture that strikes you?
Yeah, I feel it's early in the morning. I feel the person's moving towards me, and I think
the guy's running towards the camera or away from the camera?
I think he's walking towards us.
Okay.
His hand, I don't think he's running because his hands are in his pocket. You know, I'm surmising here, right?
Okay.
And I feel
yep.
like he's coming out of the fog into clarity, and he's being to the end of the pier. But truth be told, there's nothing at the end because you can't see. But he had to go into the dark. He had to go into that. And now he's starting to emerge and come out of there. And I can see what you're saying. It looks like he could be jogging. But to me, I just felt like it's like there's the loneliness side of this and the fog wrapping around you. But the sun is starting to come up and it's starting to burn off. And slowly the mist is starting to lift. And the more you come into the light here, the more you see the clarity of the benches and the whatever else.
Okay. Okay.
There are three metaphors that I use for my life. You know, one is the sheepdog. The other is the eagle with his wings fully stretched. And the other is a can of oil. And my friend was one of the heads of HR for one of the big sort of Fortune, you know, 10 companies here in Canada. And she said to me, John, you know, you're like the lubricator. And I said, what do you mean by that? And she goes, if life was about cutting grass, and the purpose of life was to cut grass, what piece would you play in cutting grass? And I said, I'm the accelerator handle, which I thought was very mean and whatever. And she said, no, she goes, you're the lubrication, you're the oil. You come in and you're able to bring things together and make things tick and work. She goes, but you're not operational. You are the essence that surrounds it and brings it. And I find that very helpful to do that. And I'll tell you a funny story. She got promoted into one of the top jobs in Canada. And I wrote to her email, not realizing nigh that she had crossed into the upper echelons of very senior executive management. She didn't do her own email. And I said, love the lubricator. And her assistant walked in and said, Karen, I've got this email and it's so spacey. And the person called themselves the lubricator. She burst out laughing. And then she goes, did he call me Tinkerbell? She goes, yes. And she goes, yeah. She goes, I told John one day, he's like the lubrication of an organization. And she goes, it's like I'm Tinkerbell and I come in and I throw pixie dust and I better get out of there quick. But I go, but John, you are actually the smoothing, the harmonizing, but you're not part of the operation. And the girl laughed. She goes, I thought it was some sort of weird sexual thing.
Right.
The lubricator.
Right. Sure, she said, we just keep this between us, okay? So I don't have to explain this anymore. she asked you, was her whole thing the beginning kind of a, with a lawnmower, what are you? And you said the accelerator. Did I get that right? And she said the lubricator?
Yeah,
or what was it?
So she said, the question was, if life and its purpose was cutting grass, which piece would you play in cutting grass? And I said, I would be the accelerator handle on the lawnmower. It's actually a really interesting question, isn't it?
Oh, it's very. That's why I want to write it down. It's a fascinating question. Yeah.
It shocks you out of the way you normally think.
Right. That's what's so great about it. You have to totally exit all these other thoughts and come into this one and do it anew. Yeah. Yep. Well, this has been really good. I mean, what's unique about this, John, is typically these workshops that we do live on location, we give a guy about 10 minutes to walk through his pictures verbally. Where we've taken now, gosh, we've taken about an hour for the 35 pictures. No, we've taken about 2 hours for the 35 pictures. So, but let me ask you this. Okay, so I forgot about this. So let me just change my view here, these pictures. Looking at these pictures, and I don't know if you can, what I'm doing is just making this so I can kind of see all of them in one view. What would you pick? Give me pick out three pictures that you would say are the most core to you, are the most true of you, are the three that you couldn't lose. You could lose all the other ones, but you can't let go of these three.
All right. That's a great question. I'm trying to see how I put them in a different way.
Yeah, I'm having to go into, I mean, Keynote
I'm
is called Light
iPad,
Table.
So,
oh,
yeah, I'm on
that's a little different.
iPad, so I don't know.
Now let me just say, if this is something better that we do next time, so you have some time to look at it, we can do that.
Let me just run through it here and see.
Okay.
Can you write these down for me while I call them out?
Yep. Let me get out a piece of paper here because I'm going to do the same. Okay, go ahead.
Let me see.
Which one?
I'm going to go, first word would be, so I'll go through them first time and then see if we can scale them down. So I'd say reach.
Okay, which number? Do you have numbers next to your slides?
Yeah.
Or not?
If
you don't, that's fine.
Okay, hang on one sec. No, I was just in a different thing. I can change it. 33, 32.
Okay. Okay.
19.
All right.
12.
Okay.
I'm just going through the top here. Yeah, those seem to be, yeah. So how many was that I gave you?
You gave me 5. So let's go through the pictures again. And you're probably on your screen. You're looking at 12 right now because you work from the bottom up. So you've gone up, right?
Yeah.
So you've got to lose, let's say we've got to lose 2 pictures here. So do you vote number 12 off the island? Do you lose that one?
No, I love 12.
Okay. Then the next one is 19.
I can lose 19.
Okay. Then the next one is 28. Powerful.
Yeah, I want to keep 28.
Okay. Then 32, which is Psalm 23. And, of course, it's also the one next to it, since you're looking at probably both of them, 32
yeah.
and 33.
I mean, I want to pick 32 because, you know, it's the Christian one, but that's such a part of who I am as a shepherd. We're looking for what's my unique role as a shepherd in people's lives so I can live with that. So I'm going to pick 33. I think the idea of really helping people expand and reach deeper and further and beyond their current capacity, and especially if you notice, like I'm drawn to fog. I'm drawn to basement darkness. I'm drawn to underwater. I don't know if you're going to ask me that, but isn't that interesting that the ones with the fog and the darkness and the loneliness really resonate with me, but mm-hmm. the precision of the bird, you know, diving into the unknown, he cannot see but yet can pick that off, really resonates with me. The bridge has the mist and the darkness, really resonates with me. And what was the other one I picked?
So it's 33, 28, and 12. So 33 is the bridge going off on the reach. 28 was the light shining on the rock in the basement. And 12 is the bird.
Yeah, that's powerful to me. That really...
Okay. Huh. Okay. Okay. So let me ask you this now. Or let's do this. So the next time we talk, how about first send me just 2 other exercises that are fairly quick and easy. One is the Passion Word exercise where you've got the words in the front and the back page. You check off all the words that have a sense of energy, life to it, passion, and then you narrow it down to 5. And by the way, on that exercise, you don't have to stick with those words. That's a starting point. If you find a word and go, I love this word, but that's not exactly it, then, you know, get off the list. Go find the word that word is leading you to. So give me as best you can your top 5 passion words. And then the other one was, I think it's called a passion theme exercise, which is your favorite movies, books, speakers. And why?
Yeah.
That work?
Yeah. And the list of words is under which? It's the passion words, and you said they're listed in that work?
Yeah, so the page, and I can send it to you again. I sent you a link to a page with all these exercises on it. And
yeah, I got
called,
that, but I don't remember seeing a list of words.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'll go back and check it, but I'm pretty sure it's like one of the – well, I can just look at it while we're talking right now. I'm pretty sure it's like the top one. Hold on here. Expand this a little bit. So it's called Passion Words, and the other, I believe, is called Passion Theme Exercise. And, okay, hold on. Instead of getting there. Pages. Okay, it's right here. Hold on. So, yeah, it's Passion Words. When you look at this page, it's number 4. It's halfway down the list. And the other is Passion Theme, which is number 3. So it's 3 and 4, right in the middle of the list of things.
Okay.
So let's do that. Let's talk about that next time. And then after that, I think we'll be in a good place to start connecting some of these dots here.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, one of the dots that just came to me there, which I articulated to you very quickly, was just helping people through the fog of leadership and how easy it is to get lost in it and get demoralized and lose track and lose yourself. I think there's, you know, that's definitely resonated with me, this idea of helping people navigate the very tough, lonely world, and often confusing world of leadership. And it's interesting, those three words where I talk about and do it with the still coming out of with the ability to reach further and not sort of give in, to do it with a sense of precision and whatever else. So I can feel it starting to form, and I'll keep going through this, and you know. But
yep.
I noticed in those pictures, yep, I'm very drawn to the leader that is trying to survive on their own.
Okay.
It's like, Gary, I deeply understand what it means to be in that leadership role where you are, you know, it's the lonely chair.
Yep.
And I have just great empathy to accompany those people and be with them in the midst of that and help them realize, don't give in, don't stop. There's hope, there's light, there's opportunity.
See, I think what's so important about what we're doing here, I'm not lifting this up above anything else, but to say that you have so much experience, you have so much training, you have so many tools on your tool belt. We really got to start, you know, this has to get narrowed down to what is your God-given,
right,
compelling in your life, really. Not, like I said, the difference between competency and calling is, calling is a thing you have to do. Competency is all the things you can do. So
right,
getting down to that heart is really good, especially for someone like you. Some people, you know, you're trying to figure out which is the real them out of a list of 4 things versus, you know, with you and others, it's a list of 30 things. We got to find the real heart of this, which then becomes so important. So,
And I think, Gary, with you saying that, I think I've been looking for what's the magic bullet that I'm going to teach versus going, who is the right person I'm going to work with? And guess what? I might be able to bring Gary Barkerlo's teaching to them and say, hey, I want you to to go through this, and I want you to learn this. Like, you know, I might with another person, like today I said, listen, you're dealing with the true self, false self stuff here, and we gotta, you gotta look at this, because this is ruining your leadership. Then someone else, I can go, hey, I want you to go down and spend a few days with, you know, with Pete Scazzaro on emotionally healthy spirituality. All of a sudden, it just dawned on me, I'm too worried about knowing stuff to teach. I actually just need to be the person that knows what's out there, because this is what I've had to do to survive. Here I am as a leader turning 52 going, what should I do? Well, the best material that I went through was Gary Barkalow's. Let me introduce you to Gary. It's not that I'm the guy that needs to be worrying about teaching that, but I'm the guy that knows it's there because I take my own personal development and survival very seriously. I'm able to be with that person where they're confused, whatever, and say, hey, look, listen, I actually think this is. And so truly I'm living into that idea of being a mentor, coach, and spiritual director. But I'm also behind that. It's like I know what's out there because I've had to go after it myself. I've had to search for it to sustain me. And I think that's just a little aha I've had. It's like I've been trying to find what is it I uniquely teach that's my teaching. But it's actually, no, actually, my job is to know what is the very best that is out there that a leader may one day need that resource, because in their journey they're going to come up against this question, this challenge, this whatever.
Right. Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. Well, and one of the things that you talked about on the picture 16 called Overflow, what you talked about that I have in my notes is you said, you know, you always want to keep taking in, so then that can then in turn overflow to others. And that's why you've been doing, as you said, all the things you've been doing. So it becomes now a resource for others, but it comes from you personally. Yeah. Yep. That's good.
But you know what's happened? In my pursuit of all these things, up until literally this past 2 minutes, I've kind of always thought, you know, why am I learning this and how am I going to use it? It is to be parked in the resource shelf, because I'm going to end up dealing with a leader who's doubting their calling. I'm going to go, I've got the perfect thing for you to do. I know the perfect person that's going to help you. Whereas I've been thinking, I need to be the one doing that. I'm going to be, oh, here it comes. Oh, here it comes. I'm going to be that bridge. I'm not going to be the, I'm going to be that true in-between person. What you need to do is you need to probably do about 3 or 4 sessions with Gary Barkalow. I had to go through this in my life. You know, I need to introduce you to Pete Scazzaro, because you're really struggling with emotional health right now, and I can access you with Peter right now. And I'm one of those people, Gary, as you get to know me, if I call you up and say, Gary, I got a leader, this is really important work, you'll trust me enough to know I'm not sending you someone. It's like I'm sending you someone of significance, and that you can go, okay, I will make sure, because this guy's probably, you know, that's kind of the world I'm in. So that's
right.
Helpful, because if in between is my main analogy of the best places to lead, I'm uniquely called to lead people who are in between moments and get them to safe passage into light, into the places that will sustain them to get them through. But I'm not necessarily the person doing that long, hard work with them. I'm accessing them to that.
Okay, well,
play with that, and I'll play with that and see what the Lord's revealing.
Okay, good. This is really good. So just let me end with 2 thoughts that came to me as you're saying that, 2 kind of pictures. One is a trail guide, someone who, you know, says, okay, we want to make it to the top of the Grand Teton. I'm going to take you up there. We'll go together. And then I think that the other picture is the guy who is the outfitter. He's the guy back in the guide place that says, okay, let's look at what you're going to need. I got to situate you with the kind of shoes you're going to need, the kind of equipment you're going to need, the kind of shape you need to be in to get there. We've got to talk about the pitfalls and the everything else so you can actually take this journey. I don't know if you'd be more of one than the other, an outfitter or a guide.
Yeah.
So
I'm definitely more the outfitter.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. That's why that picture came to me, I think, as we were talking. Okay, so let's do this. Why don't you you work on those other two. They won't take you long. They're really not hard. And then as soon as you get those done, just email me and we'll set up another time.
All right, beautiful.
Good?
Thank you. And yeah, so yeah, Gary, it's perfect. Now, Gary, I started back to work this morning at 10 o'clock with my kind of first official meeting. And so I'm ramping up. So give me just a couple of weeks here, because when I hit the office here in 15 minutes, it's the first time I'm back after 4.5 months. And I think I might be needing an in-between outfitter for 6 or 3 weeks.
I'm nervous.
I feel like I'm going back to a job for the first time, but my assistant said, what time are you getting in at? They're lining up. They're ready. So I'm both excited and going, oh, this is so sad. I'm back to work. So don't be surprised if it takes me 2 or 3 weeks to get through the next thing, because I'm moving back into a fairly steep curve. So I'll work at it. But I know that next Wednesday I go away with my team of 7 Christian leaders. We do a 2-4-day spiritual retreat. So the next 2 weeks I'm going to be busy in an unbusy way, but so it'll probably take me at least a couple of weeks to come back to you.
Hey, absolutely no problem. I know the issues of reentry, and you've got to be there for them. So absolutely no problem. You let me know whenever you're ready, we'll do it. But there's no concern about it's been too long or anything, okay?
Yeah. All right. Perfect.
All right, my friend. This is good.
Gary, the last thing I do want to say to you is just, look at your summer and see, is there a time in August where you could slip up and spend a day with me at Muskoka Woods? And I'll pay your way and cover your time and stuff. I would just like to let you see our leadership studio and see where, I think we could do a really great workshop calling with you and invite a lot of people to and introduce your work through our leadership studio. But I'd love to explore, how our leadership studio could utilize that learning also. So the best way to catch is come meet with me, spend a day with me and see the studio, meet our team and get a feel for who we are. And, but either way, I'd like to book in 2017 an actual calling retreat workshop that you do at our studio and invite, 20 leaders to and stuff.
Great. That sounds great. I will look at my calendar for August. You bet. I would love to do that. So, okay.
All right. And I'll pay for you to come up. I'll look after all your expenses and everything.
Okay. Great.
All right.
Good,
great.
John. Okay. Let me know when you're ready.
God bless. Yeah, I will.
Okay,
God bless.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye.